still have to be able to hold them there when we do have a problem. It can pour when it rains. Other times, we just get a sprinkle.
Rural police voice concerns over proposed cuts to community jails. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 13th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, some perennial back of the Packers find themselves much closer to the front of the Yukon Quest.
At the beginning of the race, I said I thought I'd be lucky to even be in the top 15 with the names and the field that this race had.
Tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Secretary of State John Kerry's agenda these days is dominated by the world's hotspots like Iran, Syria, Ukraine, and Yemen. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski met with him this week to move his focus to a cold spot, the Arctic. The senator says Kerry isn't entirely engaged in the far north, which Murkowski says is understandable.
The secretary is very focused on issues as they relate to climate. So that aspect of the Arctic, I think it's fair to say, he is engaged. I don't think that he has the bigger Arctic picture, the other Arctic pictures.
Murkowski says she had about 40 minutes to draw his attention to the Arctic as a place where people live and need to make a living. She says she raised several issues related to commercial activity.
One was the national security imperative for this country to make sure that the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline doesn't get shut down because we lose throughput.
She also brought up transboundary mines, the fear that Southeast Alaska salmon habitat could be damaged by large mines under development upriver in British Columbia. Murkowski says she and the rest of the Alaska delegation wrote Kerry's department about it last year.
Quite honestly, we've gotten nothing from the State Department on this.
Kerry told her that as a New Englander, he was familiar with environmental problems drifting across the Canadian border. Murkowski says it seemed to register.
He said, I know full well what we're talking about here and what the concerns would be from the residents of Alaska. So he said he would make sure that there was a new eye placed to it.
An official State Department photo of the meeting shows Robert Papp, the department's Arctic representative, attended, as did Secretary Kerry's yellow lab, identified in the caption as Ben the Diplomat. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is set to unveil its first steps toward expanding deepwater Arctic ports, and Corps officials say the main focus will be expanding the existing port of Nome. Bruce Sexauer is the chief of the Alaska Army Corps' Civil Works Branch.
The report is making the recommendation for Nome, for construction at Nome at this time, basically due to its highly developed area, having a good runway, a good hospital, already strong support that's already there.
Sexauer stresses the choice is provisional until public comment and other evaluations are complete. The Corps eventually hopes a system of deeper ports will be developed throughout western Alaska. Sexauer points to increased traffic in the Bering Strait and growing resource extraction in the Arctic, including potential oil and gas development in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, as necessitating the Arctic ports, starting with Nome.
This port will be able to provide support to those types of activities that are going on out there. This will provide them a closer area where they can bring in their resupply ships and offload crews closer up in the Arctic.
The Army Corps of Engineers will be in Nome Tuesday to meet with Nome's Port Commission. The full report will be released to the public by the end of next week. The The Hainesboro Police Department and Dispatch Services could face a dramatic funding loss under Governor Bill Walker's proposed budget. It would eliminate funding the State Department of Corrections, or DOC, gives each year to law enforcement in 15 small communities. That funding is meant to help towns run local jails, but in Haines, it supports more than that. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
The Alaska DOC contracts with Haines Police to operate a 3-cell, 6-bed jail. Under that contract, the DOC gave the Haines Police Department about $392,000 this year. That money is meant to help run the local jail, where people who are arrested are held for short periods of time. But the state allotment funds more than just the jail. It made up 40% of the police department and dispatch's entire budgets this year. So if the DOC were to cut the community jail's money, the Haines Police Department could lose almost half of its funding. Police Chief Bill Musser says that loss could shut down the jail, and it could also mean downsizing the 5-officer, 5-dispatcher departments.
Ultimately, the cuts may reduce staffing in both dispatch and in terms of the officers.
Department of Corrections Deputy Commissioner Ramond Henderson says they're learning that communities might rely on the state funding more than the DOC realized. The community jail's contracts cost the DOC about $10.5 million this year. Southeast communities that would be affected are Haines, Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, and Craig. There are 2 DOC-run corrections facilities in Southeast where inmates can serve out longer sentences, in Juneau and Ketchikan. Those wouldn't be impacted by this community jail's cut. Henderson says the governor has charged DOC with a general fund budget reduction of 8% effective July 1. Zeroing out the community jail's funding would take care of about 40% of that. One reason the DOC is considering this cut is because a number of community jail beds go empty. Henderson says of the 157 beds in the 15 jails, only half are filled on average each night. In Haines, that number is even lower. Of the 6 beds in the Haines jail, Henderson says on average only 1 is used per day. Chief Musser says that shows that crime is low in Haines, but having the jail is still important.
We may only occupy 1 bed. That's nice in terms of the community, but we still have to be able to hold them there when we do have a problem. It can pour when it rains. Other times we just get a sprinkle.
The Haines Jail is classified as a rural jail facility. It serves not only Haines police arrests, but Skagway police, state troopers, federal border agents, and Coast Guard. Musser says the jail held a total of 58 inmates throughout 2014. Inmates can serve up to 14 days in the jail.
Most of the misdemeanors we get here are usually fairly short, simple sentences. Say, for instance, anywhere from 3 upwards to 10 days on a DUI, depending on the level of a DUI.
Not having a local jail could mean people who are sentenced to serve even a short amount of time would go to Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau. Walker's proposed budget will likely go through a number of revisions before gaining the state legislature's approval. The final budget will be decided in May. Meanwhile, Henderson says the DOC is reaching out to communities to see what kind of fallout the funding cuts would cause. Since the funding makes up 40% of the Haines Police Department and dispatch's budgets, Musser says he'll work with other police chiefs to voice their opposition to the cuts.
It's going to affect operations and it could affect personnel. You know, it may well impact people's ability to visit or have contact with people that are in the jail. So they're going to spend more money to make their visitations by having to travel. I think it's going to increase cost to the state for having to travel. But bottom line for us is it may impact our services because we may have to reduce if we have monies that we're used to using that's there and they're no longer available.
Musser says if they have to let go police officers or dispatchers because of the funding cut, it wouldn't just impact the jail. It would impact the police's community services as a whole. Hainesboro manager Dave Sosa says this is the largest potential cut to Haines funding he's seen in Walker's proposed budget. If it goes through, Sosa says Haines will either have to lose some police services or figure out a way to make up for the funding loss. Reporting in Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Governor Bill Walker has introduced legislation clarifying the powers of the Attorney General when settling litigation related to Alaska's oil and gas resources. The two-page bill requires the Attorney General to confirm that a settlement is narrow in scope and in compliance with existing law. The catalyst for the bill was a lawsuit that Walker brought as a private citizen. The suit challenged a settlement between the state of Alaska and Exxon to develop the natural gas reserves at Point Thompson. Since the start of the legislative session, Republicans in the majority have criticized Walker for keeping the litigation active instead of offering a legislative remedy. Walker dropped the suit today in conjunction with the filing of his bill. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, designing drag queen wigs in Juneau.
This is like my light hairspray. The real stuff is the freezing spray. I mean, that stuff is like cement.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
AvTech, the state's vocational and technical school with campuses in Seward and Anchorage, will be losing programs due to the state budget cuts. AvTech's three allied health programs will be eliminated by the end of this year, according to Paloma Harbor, Administrative Services Division Director with the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
As a part of the governor's endorsed budget, all agencies were asked to contribute to the reduction because of the revenue shortfall for the state. Our department's contribution was overall an 8% reduction to the department, so it wasn't just AvTech. AvTech's share of that reduction was just over $450,000 of state funds alone.
Harbor says allied health program cuts will save the other AvTech programs.
The choice wasn't made lightly, but because it's one of the most expensive programs based on statutory requirements on instructors to students and other expenses related to the program, it was the one that they could cut to meet their target reduction. If they were to cut other programs, they would have had to cut multiple other programs.
AvTech has three nursing programs. The registered nursing program is coming to an end in July anyway because it has lost federal funding. Two other programs, licensed practical nurse and nursing assistant, will end in November because of the state cuts. AvTech's three health programs serve about 140 students a year. Harbor says the school partners with Cook Inlet Tribal Council on funding for the registered nurse program, and it is possible that it could continue if AvTech can find alternate funding sources for its share of the costs. Students currently enrolled in the nursing assistant and licensed practical nurse classes will be able to finish classes before the closures take effect. The Fairbanks North Star Borough School Superintendent says the district is facing a budget shortfall of up to $11 million in the coming school year. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, Karen Gaborik says that will require the district to eliminate more than 60 jobs.
Gaborik says the budget comes with a message.
The crux of it is that we face significant fiscal challenges.
The $11 million gap in the proposed 2015-2016 budget presented to the school board and the Citizens Budget Review Committee comes from state funding cuts and a drop in enrollment. Gaborik says district officials had anticipated eliminating about 66 positions, including about 38 teachers, to accommodate a $7.6 million cut in state funding that was due to falling enrollment in the district. They'd anticipated about 375 less students will enroll next year, bringing the district enrollment to just over 14,000. Then a couple of weeks ago, the district learned it would lose another $3.4 million due to state budget cuts in response to falling oil revenues.
So the proposed budget was based on the $7.6 million shortfall. We have not had a chance yet to respond to, you know, the possibility of an additional $3.4 million, so there may be additional cuts coming.
Gaborik says less teachers mean more students will have to be packed into classrooms, increasing the teacher-to-student ratio at all grade levels. The biggest jump would be at the high school level, where, on average, one teacher would have classes with more than 30 students. A big class like that reduces the quality of instruction that teachers can offer each student. Gaborik says the other personnel she's planning to cut in her worst-case scenario includes staff who also are essential to good instruction.
We're talking reductions in counselors, reductions in tutors, you know, reductions in nurses, things like that.
Gaborik says she's hopeful that the state will find ways to restore at least some of those funding cuts and that the borough may be able to help out as it has in recent years. Last year, the Assembly and Mayor Luke Hopkins cobbled together a plan that enabled the district to avoid cutting jobs. But Hopkins is not optimistic that the borough will be able to come through again this year with much, if any, additional funding.
We've increased funding every single year, but we can't fill that large a hole. Absolutely, we can't.
Hopkins says the borough is just beginning to hammer out its own proposed budget for next fiscal year and must deal with its own state funding shortfalls. Gaborik says the school district still has nearly 3 months to make its case to the state before the school board must approve a budget and pass it along to the borough assembly. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Brent Sass still leads the Yukon Quest by a wide margin. His closest competitor is Alan Moore, who's almost 8 hours behind. There are three Yukon Quest teams currently running among the top 10 that did not plan on racing with the front runners when they left Whitehorse. In fact, as KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, none of them were able to complete the race last year, so they returned simply to finish what they started.
When Mike Ellis arrived in Dawson City, he didn't know what place he was in.
At the beginning of the race, I said I thought I'd be lucky to even be in the top 15 with the names and the field that this race had.
Ellis has started the Quest 6 times, but he's only finished 3.
I guess this is the first Quest I've ever run where I didn't have a schedule written down in my book, where I didn't have, you know, a definitive plan of what I was going to do. I really wanted to just put my blinders on and have my focus very much on my dog team, and I think that's served me fairly well so far.
French-Canadian Normand Cossavant had a similar attitude headed into the race.
I just want to have a happy run, and I let my dogs go. And if I'm having a nice race, and a competitive one, but that's life. That's going to give it to me. And it's maybe what has happened right now.
Last year, a case of shingles cut Cossavant's race short. He says the experience changed his perspective, but there are some things that never change.
Les tiennes, où sont-elles? Pas rose et pas maquillée, moi tu sortais pareil.
Cossavant is known as the singing musher, and that's what he did when he realized he was running right on the heels of Cody Strafe.
As we climbed up King Solomon's Dome, the snow got deeper and deeper, and my leaders got really excited to break trail, and like we're just flying.
Strafe also came to finish what he started last year. In 2014, he had to scratch from the race with just over 100 miles to go. He says the early part of this year's race was tough, but he was encouraged when what started as a slow slog just outside Dawson City turned into the high point for his team.
We got up on top and they were busting in the drifts and like bouncing through it and super excited. And we'd stop and the whole team's tails would be wagging.
The top 10 teams are likely to cross the Canada-Alaska border today. They've come just over halfway, but there's still 400 miles of rough trail ahead before they reach the finish in Fairbanks. On the Yukon Quest Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in Dawson City.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Dillingham,
Sitka, Chugia, Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, wigs. James Hoagland is in the business of wigs. Not just your ordinary costume and fashion wigs. His are specifically for drag queens. He spends hours styling hair and stitching it into wig caps. Last year, he sold 300, mostly to clients in the lower 48 and internationally. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, Hoagland does it all from a little studio in Juneau.
I've got Buxom and CoverGirl. I've got the Vanilla Raspberry.
This is a small sample of the wigs James Hoagland offers.
The best wig name is Sandy Pecan Avalanche, which is exactly what you would imagine.
Despite such enticing names, most of Hoagland's business is custom. On this day, he's recreating Elsa's hair from the Disney movie Frozen. Hoagland starts off with a manufactured blonde wig about 3 feet long. It cost him about $30, and when he's done styling it, he'll sell it for $120. Of everything it takes to be a drag queen, the makeup, shoes, costume, music.
The wig will make or break you. It really will.
People watching drag queens are drawn to the face. The next focal point, Hoagland says, is the hair.
If your wig looks horrible, people really won't be able to focus on anything else. They'll be staring at your ugly wig.
The reason that Hoagland knows so much about the drag queen business is because he is a drag queen. He's not performing now, but he spent 8 years touring the country, singing in nightclubs, casinos, and theaters. He found stable work as a Liza Minnelli impersonator. His drag name is Gigi Monroe, which is also the name of his wig business. Hoagland says the very nature of being a drag queen is a paradox.
You're in a wig, you're in pounds of makeup and heavy lashes and shoes and costumes that probably aren't breathable fabrics. It's, all those things make it incredibly uncomfortable. And part of your job is to look like you are the most comfortable and the most at ease. And you feel beautiful and glamorous when you might feel like a monster.
Hoagland started his wig business the summer of 2013 on a cruise ship. He was a costume designer for Norwegian Cruise Lines on the Alaska route. He was interested in earning extra money and experimented with making a wig, something he'd gotten adept at as a queen. After he made one, he put it online.
It sold in like 3 minutes.
So he kept at it, trying different styles and putting all the wigs on Facebook.
I had a network of 5,000 drag queen friends from all over the world.
Because of cruise ship employee rules, like not taking things off the ship, Hoagland kept his wig business under the radar. He didn't want people to think he was stealing. He received packages of hair in Seattle and mailed wigs out in Skagway.
I would sneak them off the ship in these bags, and I would have my friends who were dancers on the ship carry some of them. And it was just, it was hilarious, and it was so much fun.
Hoagland ended up making 50 wigs. As he was doing that on the ship, off the ship, he was falling in love. He met his partner while in port in Juneau and had a date every time he returned. They would meet up for dinner, have coffee.
We went on hikes, we went to the ice caves, just kind of got to know each other, and he was really what I was looking for in a lot of ways.
Hoagland says his wig business allowed him to take some risks on a relationship and on Juneau. So far, they're both working out. The secret to good drag queen hair is height and more height. Hoagland says wigs for men just have to be bigger. Makeup and body curves should also be emphasized.
Whereas you downplay things like shoulders and hands and feet or height, things that make people look more masculine.
Making big hair takes teasing and lots of hairspray. Extra Superhold Aquanet.
This is like my light hairspray. The real stuff is the freezing spray. I mean, that stuff is like cement in an aerosol format.
The teasing creates a nest of knots that you can't see. Hoagland says it's hidden under the pretty part, which in the character Elsa's case is a long, loose braid that falls down around her shoulder.
It's one of those styles that's like, oh, it's supposed to look messy, but it can't be messy. It has to look perfect.
For Hoagland, Juneau is perfect. He gets a lot of support from fellow small business owners who are also artists, and the post office treats his packages with extra care.
In some ways, Juneau is the last place on earth you would ever expect a drag queen to be making wigs. but it's also kind of the perfect place.
Hoagland doesn't know how long he'll be making wigs, but he does know, in one way or another, he'll always be in the business of drag. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Non-Dalton, an Athabascan village on the edge of Lake Clark National Park.
My name is William Ivanoff, and I am the president of the Non-Dalton Tribal Council. We're surrounded by mountains. We live, you know, right on the lake, 6 Mile Lake. I wouldn't exactly say we've had a winter. We've had pretty much no snow this year. And, you know, when we do have a good winter, you know, we're out riding snow machines or, you know, going ice fishing. A normal year would be, you know, we'd have snow. We'd be out doing stuff. It wouldn't be all bare ground and slippery. From what I know, I mean, I'm only 36, you know, and, you know, there's elders here that know a lot more than I do, obviously. And from what I know, it's moved, I believe, twice. And, yeah, we've been here for thousands of years. Family gatherings and stuff like that, like in the summer, my family does, you know, we put up fish in the summer, and that's a big thing to my kids and stuff, you know. I look forward to that every summer and, you know, spend a lot of time with my family doing that.
William Ivanoff is president of the Non-Dalton Tribal Council. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lisa Fu and Annie Feit. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Matthew Smith in Nome, Emily Files in Haines, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Emily Schwing on the Yukon Quest Trail. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by ASHNA, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.